You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we'll find out how a new generation of Americans is getting involved with politics, their community, and more.
First, the smash Broadway hit Hamilton is playing in Chicago right now to rave reviews. The show brings a lesser-known founding father, Alexander Hamilton, to the forefront and draws audiences in with a different view of the nation's early days, set to an award-winning hip-hop score.
Our next guest loved the show, but says that the musical glosses over or leaves out some key points of Hamilton's legacy and the realities of the young nation. Robert Sullivan is the author of numerous books, including My American Revolution. His cover piece for the October issue of Harper's Magazine is titled The Hamilton Cult, as the celebrated musical eclipsed the man himself. Robert, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
So, full disclosure, I haven't seen Hamilton, and I feel like I've missed the boat in some ways. It's almost un-American not to be fully in on this Hamilton craze. What's going on here?
Well, yeah, I guess one of the things that's going on is that there is a tendency to feel a little like you're a little less than an American. You haven't done your patriotic duty if you haven't seen Hamilton. In fact, I heard somebody kind of introduce an evening by saying, America's divided into two camps, those who have seen Hamilton and those who haven't. And I, at that point, had not seen Hamilton, and so, of course, immediately felt bad, but I tend to feel bad anyway. But, so one of the things is, like, why is there so much pressure to see this, and how can it possibly be sort of patriotic duty to see any play or musical? So I was sort of fascinated by that phenomenon. I had not seen it until right about when I was done with the article. So,
wow! So it was very soon as you were writing this article that you actually got to experience it.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard a lot of the songs, I'd seen bits and pieces of it, and it all seemed like it would make a really great musical. And of course, when I saw it, it's a really fun musical, really great. The dancing is amazing, the songs are terrific. I personally love King George. Couldn't believe how much I love King George. But just like right there, like who has seen the musical? That would seem to sort of imply, you know, a division right away. That kind of thinking about the musical is what I kind of got, you know, excited about and thought about when I sat down to write this piece. And really, the musical's really expensive. Like, I couldn't afford to see it if I wasn't seeing it with, for a job as a press person. So it's really expensive. Like, who gets to see a musical like that? And these are some of the questions. So it turned out to be a lot about groups. Like, how do I think about the country? What groups would see the musical? What arguments in the musical are being made? And how do they appeal to certain people?
Talk a little bit about those arguments. Hamilton is credited for making order out of financial chaos and establishing a debt structure, and that was at odds with George Washington. What does it mean that this newly recognized and basically revered figure started building the national debt that is such an issue today among Americans and for our whole country?
Well, see, that's one of the things about the musical that's kind of a little bit aggravating. So although I don't want to be aggravated. I want to be very happy. That's why I like the musical. The music was really great and made me really happy. So, yeah, Alexander Hamilton is a genius. He was a genius. He kind of figured out how to take all of the debt-laden states, organize them together into one nation. One nation. He assumed the debts. He sort of put all the debts into one debt. And that debt wasn't a bad thing. So a lot of people talk today about getting the national debt down. Conservatives primarily, but also Democrats talk about bringing the debt down now. Hamilton saw the debt as a tool, a way to kind of have a giant fund to grow the country. So two things went together, debt and kind of military force. So he would grow the country, have a military, a powerful military. Remember, the colonies didn't do so well with a bunch of scattered, poorly financed militaries against the British, and Hamilton was really envious and admired the British sinking fund system. Now, if you were going to do a musical about the sinking fund, nobody would go. People would fall asleep if you did get it on Broadway. They'd fall asleep within the first few minutes. because the sinking fund is incredibly boring. But it doesn't say that debt is bad. In fact, debt in some ways is good. So he created this debt, and he needed investors and government bond buyers. And basically, he needed Wall Street investors to finance this debt. So he built a whole country on this notion, and a lot of people didn't like this. And that's not, the play doesn't really explore the people didn't like this side, understandably, because you wouldn't, it would bog down a great musical.
And he was very committed to putting down the Whiskey Rebellion, which was being fought by low-income rural people, some of whom had just come back from fighting in the Revolutionary War. That doesn't seem to fit in with this status of this man that we're talking about, this great man.
Yeah, everybody had just finished fighting the Revolutionary War. And one of the points I tried to make in the piece, that the revolution was not just one revolution. There were a series of revolutions. And, you know, smaller revolutions, a series of uprisings. Basically, the economic inequality that the colonies felt the British government were kind of setting up for the colonies was bad. People didn't want it. They didn't want to be, you know, represented in tax without representation. And they felt like the sort of elite, if you will, in England were making money off of them. And as somebody said, I think in around 1774 or something, the 99 are paying all this money, you know, and wealthening or fattening the one. It's like so out of the language of Occupy Wall Street. Anyway, there were a number of revolutions that kind of built and built, and people resisted the Stamp Act, all these acts. And finally, the kind of the sort of moneyed class in the colony says, you know what, we're going to start listening to the people who are not happy about this, which is most people. And we're going to join in with this revolution. And that kind of gives us the American Revolution. So after the American Revolution, people are saying, hey, great, this is great. We're going to deal with this economic inequality. I mean, this is one big current that happens in the revolution. And everybody says, terrific, great, terrific. And then all of a sudden, Hamilton comes in. Not all of a sudden, but after the Articles of Confederation fail, they start a new constitution, and he creates this sinking fund. He says, this is how we're going to run it. And we're actually going to tax you guys, the farmers, on your whiskey and stuff, and we're going to use that money to pay the investors, the government bondholders, and we're going to pay them interest. And we're not going to tax their interest. They're actually going to not pay taxes on that stuff. This did not make people happy, and Hamilton often referred to, or people referred to around Hamilton, referred to the Whiskey Rebellion guys, the farmers in Pennsylvania, all in the Appalachian Mountains, the other side of the Appalachians. He referred to them pretty liberally as drunk, like drunk poor farmers. And in fact, they were very interested in kind of social equality. A lot of the things you have in Wisconsin, you guys started, I think you started sort of unemployment insurance. I remember there's a great memorial to that kind of stuff in right near the Amtrak train station in downtown Milwaukee. But, you know, a lot of the social movements that we take for granted today, like I say, unemployment insurance, but Social Security, these things are being pitched by the Whiskey Rebellion farmers. They weren't against government as we would have it today in any way. In fact, they were very much for government, but they were against this inequality. So the play, sort of, I can't blame it, kind of papers over this. But there's one giant thing about the play, I'll say. Just essentially that while we do have Hamilton, we do recognize in the play that he is from the Caribbean, that he is he's a person of color. And while this is terrific, and while we have in the play people of color playing the white people of the revolution, the play in itself doesn't really go too far to represent the fact that there were a lot of people of color who were, for instance, slaves in New York. There really are very few people of color from the history represented in the play. Now, I don't even have a problem with that because I mentioned that the music was great and the play is terrific. But I guess the big thing is that it's really kind of falling into the rubric of great white men, and that wouldn't even be a problem so much, except that when you see who's kind of applauding the play, and everybody is applauding the play. You know, you saw Bernie Sanders at the play, Hillary Clinton at the play, the Vice President Cheney was at the play, former Vice President. So was his wife, Lynn Cheney. But what's really interesting is that this plays out, this kind of idea of history, the sort of great white male history American history, the emphasizing the positives and not emphasizing the any of the negatives, or dwelling with our school children on things like the Ku Klux Klan or Japanese internment, any negatives, that sort of thread of thinking is kind of played down by the sort of Hamilton thread of thinking. So you have a lot of people supporting sending kids to the play, young people to the play, and those people actually were against teaching kids in class kind of a multicultural history of America. So who's lining up for Hamilton is very interesting at this moment.
Robert, in the title of your article in Harper's, you ask whether the musical eclipsed the man himself. Has it? Is our image of him now likely to change with the times?
Well, I think we can say that it has changed, because Hamilton was the master of minutiae, of sort of financial minutiae. So we now think of him as this kind of amazing guy who, you know, was in a duel and kind of pushed these big ideas. And the guy was a genius. Just to read the Federalist Papers and all that he could churn out in minutes, he was an amazing writer, you know, just really a genius. But he wasn't for the little guy, and that's kind of what's being lost here. So I personally hope that this encourages us to look at Hamilton and to look again at Hamilton and to kind of understand, you know, the minutiae of what he's talking about. What does it mean to have a federal government that's based largely on, you know, growth by the necessity of investors making money and the necessity of a large military? Is that being downplayed in the play for this kind of personal greatness of this one individual? And I hope it hasn't. I hope we haven't finished looking at Hamilton.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
That was Robert Sullivan. He joined us to talk about the hit Broadway musical Hamilton and what parts of the Founding Fathers' legacy are missing from the play. Sullivan's cover piece for the October issue of Harper's Magazine is The Hamilton Cult. Has the celebrated musical eclipsed the man himself? And it's linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up, Election Day isn't the only time to get involved in the world around us. Our guest shares his research on civic engagement in a digital age. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.